We will start today talking about basic properties of the Riemann integral that reflect its linear nature. So let a b be a non-empty bounded closed interval, let f b and g be Riemann integrable functions on this interval, and let alpha be a real number. Then f plus or minus g and alpha times f are integrable, and we have that the integral from a to b of f of x plus or minus g of x dx equals the integral from a to b of f of x dx plus or minus the integral from a to b of g of x dx. And secondly, the integral from a to b of alpha times fx dx is equal to alpha times the integral from a to b of f of x dx. These are two very basic properties that we use all the time when we're evaluating integrals, because it's a way of breaking up a complicated integral into simpler integrals. So to prove A, for example, let capital A be the integral from A to B of f of x dx. Let capital B be the integral from A to B of g of x dx. Let epsilon be greater than 0. Choose delta 1 bigger than 0 so that if P is a partition of the interval AB with mesh less than delta 1, then Riemann sum fP minus A in absolute value is less than epsilon over 2. Similarly, choose delta 2 bigger than 0 such that if P is a partition of AB with mesh less than delta 2, then Riemann sum GP minus B in absolute value is less than epsilon over 2. Let delta be the minimum of delta 1 and delta 2. If P prime is any partition of AB with the mesh of P prime being less than delta, then the Riemann sum of F plus or minus G with respect to P prime minus A plus or minus B equals the Riemann sum of F with respect to P prime plus or minus the Riemann sum of G with respect to P prime minus A plus or minus B. And by the triangle inequality, this is less than or equal to the absolute value of the Riemann sum of F P prime minus A plus the absolute value Riemann sum of G P prime minus B. And each one of these is less than epsilon over 2, and the sum of those two quantities is epsilon. So this proves that the integral of f plus or minus g exists and equals a plus or minus b, and that's what we wanted to show. The proof of b is similar, but actually much easier, and so we will omit that and leave you to think about it. A more interesting and technical result, but one that's very useful, is this. If c is a point of the interval ab, and if f is Riemann integrable on both ac and cb, then f is integrable on ab, and the integral from a to c of f of x dx plus the integral from c to b of f of x dx equals the integral from a to b of f of x dx. Proof, let capital A be the integral from a to c of f of x dx and capital B equal the integral from c to b of f of x dx. Pick epsilon bigger than 0. There is a delta 1 bigger than 0 such that if p is a partition of ac with mesh less than delta 1, then the Riemann sum of fp minus a all in absolute value is less than epsilon over 3. Similarly, choose delta 2 bigger than 0 so that if p prime is a partition of cb with mesh less than delta 2, then the Riemann sum of fp prime minus b, all in absolute value, is less than epsilon over 3. Let capital M be an upper bound for absolute f. Set delta to be the minimum of delta 1, delta 2, and epsilon divided by 6m. Now let capital script v equal v1 through vk be any partition of ab with mesh less than delta, where delta is the minimum of delta 1 and delta 2. There is a last point vn, which is in ac, and a first point vn plus 1 in cb. Observe that p equals v0 through vn comma c is a partition of ac with mesh smaller than delta 1, and p prime equals c comma vn plus 1 through vk is a partition of cb with mesh smaller than delta 2. Let us rename the elements of p as p naught through pn plus 1, and the elements of p prime as p naught prime through p sub k minus n plus 1 prime. Notice that pn plus 1 equals p naught prime equals c. For each j, let sj be a point chosen in the interval ij, which is vj minus 1 vj from the partition v. Then we have that the Riemann sum of fv minus capital A plus capital B equals absolute value summation j equals 1 to n fsj delta j minus capital A plus fsn plus 1 delta n plus 1 plus summation j equals n plus 2 to k fsj delta j minus b. Absolute value. And this can be rearranged. Unfortunately, this is split between two different screens. It's kind of a long expression that we have, and what we're doing is adding and subtracting a lot of quantities here. So all the spare terms that you see on these two screens, if you write them on a piece of paper and see everything that cancels, you'll see you'll end up with FSN plus 1 plus delta n sub n plus 1. So we have absolute value summation j equal 1 to n FSJ delta j plus F at c times c minus Vn minus capital A plus FC times Vn plus 1 minus c plus summation j equals n plus 2 to k FSJ delta j minus b plus FSN plus 1 minus F at c times c minus Vn plus FSN plus 1 minus F at c Vn plus 1 minus c. And by the triangle inequality, this is less than or equal to absolute value summation j equal 1 to n FSN FSJ delta j plus FC times c minus Vn minus a plus absolute value FC Vn plus 1 minus c plus summation j equals n plus 2 to k FSJ delta j minus b absolute value plus absolute value FSN plus 1 minus FC Vn plus 1 minus Vn. And this equals the Riemann sum of f with respect to p minus a plus the Riemann sum of f with respect to p prime minus b plus FSN plus 1 minus F at c times Vn plus 1 minus Vn. And the first of these, of course, is less than epsilon over 3 by our choice of the partition. The second one is less than epsilon over 3 by our choice of the partition. And the third one is less than 2m, because we have two copies of f there, times delta, because the partition V has mesh less than delta. But we chose delta to be smaller than epsilon over 6m, so the whole mess is less than or equal to epsilon. This shows that f is integrable on the entire interval AB, and the value of the integral is capital A plus capital B, which is the integral from A to C of f of x dx plus the integral from C to B of f of x dx. The last proof illustrates why it is useful to be able to choose the SJs and the IJs arbitrarily. Example, if we adopt the convention that the integral from B to A of fx is minus the integral from A to B of fx, which is consistent with the way that the integral was defined in the first place, then the last theorem is true even when C is not an element of AB. For instance, suppose C is less than A is less than B, then by the theorem, the integral from C to B of f of x dx plus the integral, sorry, the integral from C to A of f of x dx plus the integral from A to B of f of x dx equals the integral of from C to B of f of x dx. But this may be arranged to read the integral from A to B of f of x dx is minus the integral from C to A of f of x dx, because minus the integral from C to A is the same as the integral from A to C plus the integral from C to B of f of x dx. And that's the integral from A to C of f of x dx plus the integral from C to B of f of x dx. One of the basic tools of analysis is to perform estimates, thus we require certain fundamental inequalities about integrals. These are recorded in the next theorem. Let f and g be integrable functions on a non-empty interval AB. Then one, the integral from A to B of f of x dx, all at absolute values, is less than or equal to the integral from A to B of absolute fx dx. So you can take absolute value signs outside the integral sign and put them inside the integral sign and get a favorable inequality. Secondly, if f of x is less than or equal to gx for all x in the interval AB, then the integral from A to B of f of x is less than or equal to the integral from A to B of g of x. Proof, if p is any partition of AB, then the Riemann sum fp, all in absolute value, is less than or equal to the Riemann sum of absolute fab. So the first assertion follows just by passing to the limit. Next, for part two, the Riemann sum of fp is less than or equal to the Riemann sum of gp, and then we get our inequality for integrals by passing to the limit. A final example, we may estimate the integral from 0 to 1 of sine cubed x as follows. We apply the last theorem, part 1, to see that the integral from 0 to 1 sine cubed dx is less than or equal to the integral from 0 to 1 absolute sine cubed x dx. And absolute sine cubed x, of course, is less than or equal to 1. So we can estimate that last integral by the integral from 0 to 1 of 1, and that's equal to 1. That's the end of today's lecture. Thanks for listening.